You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Madagascar is on the verge of the world's first climate change-driven famine, according to the United Nations. In southern Madagascar, almost 30,000 people are experiencing the World Food Programme's highest level of starvation, with millions more facing extreme food insecurity. This comes after changing weather patterns have left the region without rain for 4 years. Louis spoke to the World Food Programme's Shelley Thakral about the famine, the role of climate change, and how water management could be improved. To start, Louis asked Shelley to give an overview of the famine conditions in Madagascar.
What we're seeing is a repetition of very severe droughts. For the last 4 years, these farmers, who are mostly severely affected, the fact that they've had no rain, no decent rain anyway, not enough to harvest, not enough to plant. So every year, the lean season, when it comes around, and we're sort of a month away now from that critical moment of people who depend on their land, live on their land. It's time now for them to start thinking about the food production season looks like. And it's quite desperate because, you know, when you don't have enough rain and sometimes you're growing crops that perhaps are more dependent on water, such as maize. Also, the scarcity of water in southern Madagascar is quite difficult. The infrastructure, the pipeline. So that's something that the government is absolutely making a priority. So all of this has resulted in a very critical mass of people who are now very severely food insecure. And they're in this critical number where we call catastrophe. So that's people that are on the brink of starvation because they're not able to live off their land. They perhaps even have been displaced by the situation. So they've had to move and leave land behind and their livelihoods.
How many people is this impacting?
Yeah, in the catastrophe, almost 28,000 people. What we're seeing is that drought has actually doubled the amount of people who are affected most severely. There is a classification called integrated food phase classification, which basically determines levels of food insecurity from 3 to 4 to 5. And we've never seen category 5 in southern Madagascar. This is purely driven by climate change, meaning severe drought where you just haven't been able to plant sufficient and live off the land. 1.3 million people projected by the end of 2021 be food insecure, more than 500,000 children by next April, very severely acute malnourishment.
This is all just in southern Madagascar.
Yes, the epicenter of this catastrophe is southern Madagascar, right down in Ambavombe, Ambassare, and it's basically just kind of, you know, cut off because of how the drought has been affecting communities. What tends to happen is very severe sandstorms have also affected the land, so that, you know, almost Sahelian type sandstorms that have swept in from the coastline and covered land, which normally would have been quite fertile. But then when you don't have water, you know, that also things very, you know, really, really difficult. And these are farmers.
Just stepping back a little bit, because you do touch on the geography of the region and that it is particularly susceptible. Why exactly is South Madagascar at such a risk of this?
Partly because there's been a very severe drought for the last 4 years. It's a very flat terrain, so easily when the sand does sweep across the fields, that makes it really hard, you know, not very manageable. The way Madagascar sits as an island, when cyclones hit across the southern African region, and there are cyclones, you know, nearly every year, Madagascar sometimes tends to bear the brunt of tail end of the very heavy wind, which obviously causes the dunes from the coastal areas to sweep over this land in the south. If you fly over Madagascar, what you'll notice is the terrain goes from a very hilly tropical sort of rainforest in the north down to the south, which is much flatter, and you can notice the difference, you know, the extreme difference, the land just turning very pale orange colour, and that's mainly because of how the sand has covered normally would be land for farmers.
And are there pre-existing economic and demographic issues that have contributed to why this has become so devastating and so severe?
Well, COVID has also had a massive impact. If you think about how normally the island would depend quite heavily heavily on tourism. People would have migrated to parts of the island for seasonal work or to the city. So COVID, the pandemic has also, in the last 2 years, 18 months, has had a huge impact on people's socioeconomic situations. And that hasn't helped as the country's been in lockdown. You know, livelihoods have suffered, food prices have increased. You meet people in the south and you know, the way that they have to make ends meet is they sometimes just sold everything. They've sold utensils, they've sold belongings, they've sold whatever little they had just to survive. This is obviously quite worrying when you are seeing a demographic who are just basically living quite literally hand to mouth.
That's something I did want to touch on a little bit, because the personal stories are what are most important from this. You spent 1 month there, if I'm not mistaken. But from your experience there, what was the individual stories that really stood out?
There's an expression in Malagasy called kere, which means empty stomach. And when people tell you empty stomach, empty stomach, empty stomach, you know, that's heartbreaking to think that, you know, people are just going to bed hungry. They have very little to survive on. They're probably foraging, hunting for whatever food they can find. Water, again, when you drive, I spent 4 days driving to the south. The roads become narrower and more difficult to navigate. You can just see how dry and cracked the earth is. People are walking almost 2 to 3 kilometers a day, perhaps to collect maybe 20 liters, 15 liters of water. It's hot, it's dry. I met a couple of families who live in this very severely affected area, and that just sheer desperation of not really knowing what is the solution, for them not knowing what is the outcome. How do you turn a corner? How do you hope for a better future when you are just surviving perhaps on raw cactus fruit or whatever you can find, as well as rations that you're getting from the government, other agencies, plus the World Food Programme. But people, one lady told me, you know, I've sold everything. Even if I do find food, I have to go to my neighbour, I have to borrow firewood, utensils to be able to cook the food. She had 7 children. Other people who are just distraught, their children are undernourished, underweight, and they have, you know, they're seeking, they come to the prevention and treatment centres, which UNICEF and the World Food Programme run.
What can people do? Is there any way forward? Is there anything that can be done other than just surviving off drought-related conditions?
Yeah, no, this is for us. I mean, the support that we want to give the people, we need $108 million to be able to provide emergency food assistance. But also, you know, we're looking to long-term development. We're working with the government to support a more integrated water irrigation, water resource project. Water is the main priority, to be able to improve that system, to also improve diet diversity, to look at seeds which are drought resistant, to look at the much more long-term effect of growing cassava or sorghum and not having a dependency on maize or rice. So this will take time. It will take time, but it is possible.
Yeah, because how does the recovery, which you guys from the World Food Programme are obviously looking into, but how does it compare to a lot of other famines which may result from conflict or poor governance, given that this is a climate change driven situation?
So each case is different. We would never do a like for like comparison. In the case of southern Madagascar, if we have resources, if we have money, we're able to turn that around and really support the government and really support people in southern Madagascar. I mean, we have time. And I think it's absolutely critical to look at long-term resilience, to look at long-term livelihood programs, to look at programs which will benefit smallholder farmers, so that we're not in a situation come 6 months' time, come 9 months' time, where people perhaps will be facing, you know, similar situations where, you know, the drought has extended, but you're able to cope better and we've got better adaptation in place to be able to counter some of those risks.
Do you, I guess, as someone who's spent a lot of time there and is working in the recovery, do you have faith that there is going to be a recovery from this, that we're going to be able to resolve the conditions and work towards better farming and better food security in southern Madagascar?
I do, and I'll tell you why. I think this, what we've been doing for almost a year now, since September 2020, is really raising awareness, you know, making sure, you know, people like you, your listeners, people being aware of the fact is that, you know, when you do have climatic shocks or climate change, which puts people on the front line and has affected people so severely, and we all probably need to do something ourselves to really perhaps change our behaviours in the way that we are much more responsible, and whether we look at wildfires in Europe or North America, but also just to be able to see that, you know, there are other repercussions in other parts of sub-Saharan Sub-Saharan Africa, which are bearing the brunt of climate change. And the biggest issue really is that these people have done nothing to contribute to climate change, yet they are on the front line of something that's quite visible and is affecting their own lives. So I'm hopeful that now we are in a position, if we raise the money, we can get our programs on track, we can make sure that we work with the right scientific experts, we can work with the government. There is the will, there is a way, and I think it's absolutely possible for this situation to improve.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.